Well, hi, friends, and good evening here from Finland. This is the 13th of October, just have to check. And we've been dealing with forms in meditation, forms that affect the three vehicles that are related to rays, that are related to healing, and mantras, which are related to all of those. Some amazing information is given by the Tibetan about the power of the ancient Sanskrit mantras, and even more powerful mantras in the Sensar, and mantras that allow us to get in touch with the higher energies on our planet and with ray lords, with planetary logoi of different planetary schemes in our solar system. Just amazing, the power. And how much, of course, we have to be prepared, properly prepared, in order to receive these mantras from those who know. It's all a question of humility and right sense of proportion, and the repudiation of a kind of selfishness which grows up with us as we emerge from the animal kingdom. But we've had, you know, a number of millions of years to do that. And if we are actually studying what the Tibetan is recommending, then we should be almost to the point where some of the major forms of selfishness are abating. Now, we are to the point where we're speaking of forms used in one of the three departments of the, you know, Manu, Bodhisattva, Mahachohan, three great departments of hierarchy with three great lords, either of the sixth degree or becoming seventh degree. Just think, our teachers have reached that elevated status, and it has taken them a long time. In the case of Master R, he was elevated to this Mahachohanship somewhere around 1925. It's quite recent. Was he before that initiate of the fifth degree, or had he already achieved the sixth degree? Anyway, as the Mahachohan, he certainly has to have achieved now the sixth degree. And the Manu, we are told, is a sixth degree initiate in the Christ. Also, though far advanced into working on the seventh degree, just as is the Buddha. So, the interest, he says, of what I have to communicate today is very great. For we have to take up the matter of the forms used in the department of the Manu, the world teacher, and the Mahachohan, the Lord of Civilization. And remember, when this was written, somewhere in the very early 20s, the Master R was not yet the Mahachohan. The Mahachohan had, of that time, had held office for a long time. I don't know the figure exactly, but it seems that the Mahachohan holds office for the longest time when comparing to the other great lords of hierarchy, and the Bodhisattva for the least amount of time. These three departments represent in the hierarchy the three aspects of the Logos as manifested in the solar system. The aspect of will or power, the aspect of love, wisdom, which is the basic aspect of the system, you know, the great synthetic indigo ray in this second ray solar system, also a second ray personality at this time, and the aspect of activity or intelligence, adaptation, creative intelligence, abstraction, it's called by many names, abstract mind. You know from your studies the work undertaken by these departments. The Manu manipulates matter. Interesting that, you know, on this ray of abstraction and death, there is such concern with the strengthening of the lower forms of matter so that adequate vehicles can be created to contain the powers from above. And always manipulation, you know, the intelligent adjustment is present always with any of the three great lords and a degree of love present with all of them and a strong degree of will present with all of them. The man who manipulates matter and is occupied with the evolution of form, whether it is the dense physical form of animal, mineral, flower, human being, or planet, or the form of races, nations, devas, or the other evolutions. Well, you questioned there for a moment. There are these different kingdoms, of course. Does he mean that they are the other evolutions? Devas are a parallel kingdom to the human kingdom. So, you know, one day we will meet these figures, and let us hope that our worthiness is present. I'm remembering a story about Madame Blavatsky when she saw her master Moria at a great festivity in Victorian England in the middle of the 19th century. Okay, she knew who he was, but she did go to Tibet and she was met by him. And she is said to have pressed her face against his mud spattered saddle. You know, her devotion was so great to him. And he is said, for all of her liabilities, you know, the masters will use whomever can be, they can get something out of them at least. Master Moria said it was touching somehow, that very deep devotion. So, you know, even from a high initiate like Blavatsky, a fourth degree initiate, we might say, and now a master, according to Helena Rorick, devotion is not to be minimized. And Dr. Baker has an interesting ray assignment for Blavatsky, the first ray soul, first ray personality, fifth ray mind, and sixth ray astral body and physical body, maybe hence her mediumship. If he's correct on this, and you know, it seems a reasonable assignment. The Bodhisattva or world teacher works with the evolving life within the form, with the implanting of religious ideas, and with the development of philosophical concepts, both in individuals and races. We're told that somehow for Master Kutumi, all books on philosophy, at least semi-worthy, come across his desk whatever a desk means at that high stage. I just have to put it in blue, you know. I'm sorry. It is a little bit... I need a lighter blue, something between what I've got and what I've got. But anyway, I think you can read it. You know, there is a philosophical tendency in terms of the philosophy of wisdom. Maybe philosophia, you know, the love of wisdom, on the second ray, and not an entirely intellectual philosophy, as you're more likely to find on the third ray. So the life within the form, that is the concern of the bodhisattva. And I think, you know, so many of us who read the Tibetan books and stick with it, we have this second ray somewhere powerful, whether in the soul or in the monad. And the Mahachohan, who synthesizes the lower four rays, deals with mind or intelligence, and in collaboration with his brothers, controls the evolution of mind, whereby the spirit or self utilizes the form or the not-self, utilizes, manipulates, uses as an instrument. The form is used intelligently as an instrument. And, you know, there are some people in the Tibetans' work who have that third ray. There were a couple who had the third ray soul. Well, I know one, the very first disciple mentioned. Is it BSD? He was an Englishman, and from our research by members of the Mori Federation, he was a Rosicrucian and likely to think of himself as an intellectual, but DK said, it's your sixth ray that brought you to us and not your third ray. Oh yeah, and there was another man on the third ray, LTSK, who suffered much from glamour, but he was on his way and had made sacrifices of a financial kind so that the Alice Bailey books could be published. And maybe he was a bit of a fanatic. Interesting that both BSD, am I correct in that? He was, you know, the first one mentioned or written about in Dyna II, because his last name was Adams, so they took it in alphabetical order. He had a six-ray personality, and so did LTSK have a six-ray personality. Interesting about the six-ray, that when it resolves into one of the rays of aspect, it can be also ray three, into which a six-ray soul resolves, as well as, maybe we think more likely, into ray two. All of these resolutions and changes, you know, will be studied closely by those who in the future can expertly diagnose what is the ray situation. We are certainly dealing with intangibles when we deal with the rays. You just have to be able to detect what is the geometry, what is the tendency, what are the qualities. It's a search. With astrology, you just know. Maybe you might have a little trouble interpreting what it is you know. But you know at least what the position is, whether of house or sign of any planet. All right. The synthetic work of the three great lords is inconceivably great. When we talk about this new ashram later that would emphasize the wisdom aspect. The Buddha is involved with it. The Master R is involved with it. I think maybe Master DK also. They all have a lot of third ray. And I think when you combine the second ray with the third or with the first, the tendency towards wisdom will be found. Each one of us, you know, has one kind of emphasis or another, and in some people, there's a balance, and maybe not all of us have that balance, you know, being more involved with love or being more involved with the cooler wisdom aspect. So inconceivably great, form, life, intelligence, matter, spirit, mind, prakriti, purusha, manas, are the three lines of development, and in their synthesis comes completeness. We have different names for the same kind of trinity. Well, obviously, you know, with form, the second ray is the form builder. Life is connected with the will and with the deepest internality and intelligence, with the third aspect that manipulates form for the purpose that life demonstrates or demands. Again, this one's maybe not so easy, but the spirit is of the first aspect. Mind, well, matter. Matter is certainly of the third aspect, then is mind in this particular case, the soul. And are we dealing then with the second aspect, or that aspect of mind which is associated with the second ray? Prakriti is matter again, Purusha is spirit, and Manas is the intermediary. You know, sometimes Manas, when connected with the solar angel or the higher mind, is considered related to the second ray and not just the third. Three lines of development. So, you know, it's worthwhile to try to discern how Master DK is assigning these words. Because in the case of intelligence and mind, well, intelligence in the first triad definitely is the third ray. He prefers the name the ray of creative intelligence. But in the next triad and the one after that, maybe it's the intermediary. Anyway, the three aspects have to be synthesized. So synthesis is vital, vitally important. And you know, we ask how much or how well have I synthesized these three aspects in my own nature. Obviously, in any one life, maybe there's an emphasis on one or the other. And when the soul sounds the note of the egoic lotus or causal body before birth, any imbalance is noted. And in the construction of the vehicles, as we're told early on in this book, there is a tendency to supply instrumentation, which is missing in the overall configuration of the three relative to each other. Each of these three lines works through formulas or through set forms which by graded steps put the man who employs the form in touch with the particular line of evolution represented by the head of that line. Again, secrets of initiation. The soul may impart some of these secrets from time to time when the degree of our intensity regarding the point of tension we're holding is sufficient. And he talks about, you know, how certain mantrams may seep through certain protective forms. He talks about in White Magic, they may come through not only from the oral transmission by the teacher, but in any case, to know that these formulas and set forms do exist, and that we have to strive towards them and render ourselves worthy to receive them. To know this is a great incentive on the path. We're not going to rush this path. We can follow the rules of the road and say each pilgrim presses his footsteps forward until he finds himself surrounded by his fellow men. Some move ahead, he moves after. Some move behind, he sets the pace. He knows he travels not alone. We can press forward. There is no time to lose. There is no rush nor hurry, nor is there time to lose. The seriousness of the path of occultism dawns upon us, and we really don't, under such circumstances, want to waste time, which just delays our entry into certain energetic states by means of which we can better see and better serve. The see part is consciousness, and the serve part, of course, the law of service, third ray, ray of the soul, or maybe sixth ray, you know, the law of water and the fishes. You see, what we try to do here, well, you know, DK is much better than I am at sticking to the subject, but I'm branching out here and trying to tie many things together so that we may understand the wholeness of the teaching, and so many lines of light may flash forth which originally did not do so for our consciousness. They will flash forth because we've made the connection. And when the connection between plus and minus is made, the demonstration is light. And so we work to create a lighted sphere, a lighted sphere of knowledge. Someone asked me the other day, well, do you really mean a sphere? Maybe you mean holography or something like that. I said, no. Of course, I respect the whole principle of analogic holography, but I mean a sphere of knowledge ever expanding and ever intra-articulating, you know, ever emerging with greater lighted detail, or the elements within it being elements that help us achieve greater light in this ever-expanding sphere until the sphere embraces the entire universe. The boundless sphere of the super universal logos, as I conceive it, embraces absolute infinitude. Hard to imagine something without boundaries. Maybe imagine, try to imagine a zero without boundaries. Anyway, that's another subject. Now, what? first to get it to move, right? Okay. And here's a, well, is this an ellipse? Ellipsis, he said something here. And, you know, the general public in which we are participating is not allowed to receive these things in written form. They are so careful, the masters, in what they impart. As we were told in studying mantrams just a little while ago, how very careful they have to be lest these mantrams seep out and can be wrongly used, and even wrongly used by the very intelligent obstructive forces that seek to delay or distort the divine plan. So when we see those dot, 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 okay, one day we will know. What I seek to bring out here are the three clear lines whereby a man may mount to the Logos and find union with the self of the solar system. There is one I would capitalize, but okay, you know, the Logos, the way he says it here, can very easily be the planetary Logos, but maybe. Well, since we're talking about the three great lords of our hierarchy on our globe, and maybe they have other extensions on other globes. We seem to be talking about our planetary Logos. But the self of the solar system is something much greater. And just imagine the state when you're able to identify as the self of the solar system and really, you know, really realize that it is true. We're such tiny little emanations, but when we realize that those are just aspects of the Mahamaya, and that as we unveil and break through rings past knots, we're going to become an ever larger, more essential self. So what is your line? And how are you moved towards our planetary Logos and eventually towards our solar Logos? Maybe the three sub-solar Logoi, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, on the Logoic plane, will give us the hint. There are seven monadic types and three liberated monadic types, liberated from the monadic vehicle. What does it mean to be liberated from a vehicle? It means, you know, when you perceive, you are no longer blocked in your perception by the limitations of the vehicle in which your consciousness finds itself. He can mount by the line of the Manu, says the Tibetan. He can attain through the line of the Bodhisattva, or he can reach his goal via the path of the Maha Chohan. Usually, you know, the students of the Blue Books are going along the Bodhisattvic line somehow. If their soul ray is the first, they still may be a second ray monad. And if their soul ray is the third, they may still be a second ray monad. Or, you know, the soul ray itself can be the second, and they may mount accordingly. But don't take my word for it. You know, you have to discover for yourself what is your resonant way of mounting to ever higher points of tension. Nobody except the master can tell you, and he would be well advised to let you try to figure it out for yourself at first, which is what he did. You know, First of all, when people applied to be in his group or groups, he had them estimate their raise. Then a bit later, he corrected those estimations for the soul and personality ray. And he let them still continue to ponder on what might be the rays of their vehicles, mind, emotions, body, etheric, physical. And then he straightened that out too. But he always gave them a chance to think first, because then you see what made it possible for you to be accurate, or what it might have been that misled you. I mean, you know, a very, very strong ray from the past can seem current, whereas the current ray may be, because not yet much developed, weaker than the momentum and the presence of a ray from the past. So that is, this business of the rays is, you know. Okay, sorry there for that little interruption. Life goes on. A person can mount, and this is the whole thing, you know, mount, achieving the mountain top, the third degree, and going on to other mountains by the line of the Manu, Bodhisattva, or Mahachohan, and which is yours? And how do you know? What is it within you that makes you convinced that it is so? And where does that ray line come from? Does it come from your soul, which is the most obvious and immediate possibility? Or actually, is it a monadic impulse, which is also possible? DK does say, you know, if you stick with me, I'm paraphrasing here, the students that remain with me, for whom I am the source here of this information, well appreciated, their soul ray or monadic ray will be on the second ray, even though his own monadic ray, like the Buddha's, at least one of them, I feel is on the third ray for many reasons. With the Buddha, there's no question, but with Master DK, there's good reason to think that one of the monadic rays is the second. Okay, but let's go on here. But specially note that on this planet, the Lord of love and power, the first Kumara, is the focal point for all three departments. Love and power. That's so interesting. The Lord of love and power. The one initiator. He is the one initiator, and whether a man works on the line of power or on the line of love or on the line of intelligence, he must finally find his goal on the synthetic ray of love, wisdom, somehow to be absorbed into the soul nature of the planetary logos. And the Sanat Kumara is embodying that as an emanation of the planetary logos, maybe not the full logos, but a powerful emanation. And the council chamber is on the first orlogoic plane. So the very highest part of Shambhala, with regard to our globe, in terms of its the cosmic physical part of our globe, is on the logoic plane, but also Sanat Kumara is holding sway over the Chohans, of which there are seven lines, and they occur on the second subplane, second cosmic subplane, or what we call the monadic plane. So there is resolution, at least at this time, in the synthetic ray of love and wisdom. And especially the closer to the solar logos we get, the more this is reinforced. And when we start talking about some of these sixth and seventh degree initiates, maybe especially the seventh degree types, we are connected with the love wisdom of the solar logos. He must be love and manifest it forth, but it may be love working through power, maybe first ray monad. It may be love in harmony, or love working through knowledge, through ceremonial or devotion, or it may be just pure love and wisdom blending with the others. Maybe that would be a second ray monad and a second ray soul, such as I suspect Roberto Saggioli is. Maybe Alice Bailey too. Love was the source, love the goal, love the method of attainment. Oh, powerful, powerful, powerful. You know, you get arrested. you stop in your tracks when you read some of these wonderfully eloquent summaries the Tibetan gives us. But he must be love. So now in the next solar system, since we're not yet a sacred planet, the first ray is occultly non-effective, the first ray monad. But then if it's true of planetary logo as it is of humanity, I believe it's true that there's the choice of seven monadic rays and then of three liberated monadic rays. Maybe it's that way for planetary logo, a choice of seven monadic rays, or again of three, which somehow are connected with the solar logos. You know, the maybe I don't want to ever get lost here, but it's really easy to do. I'll try to find, yeah, right here. So let's see if I can, when you're using Zoom, you always have to be careful because you can talk about one thing and then have it lost. Well, here are planetary logoi, seven below three, three above seven. And when you look at monadic types, well, here, you know, we have seven possible types, but really the little green triangle is monadically what we're interested in. The three is not demonstrated except that there is a triangle in the area of liberation. Well, that's talking so high that it's going to be way beyond the masters themselves. So, you know, it's the sheerest mental speculation. But certainly, three represent the major monadic rays, and seven, these seven subsidiary or normal monadic rays, at least that is my estimation at the present time, from my present level of ignorance, you know, until proven correct or incorrect. You just have to extend those hypotheses and see if they work out. So whichever way we ascend, the object in our solar system for our planet at this time and for these certain trillions of years that are involved in the remainder of the manifestational period of our planetary logos, it's not going to last the whole time, the objective is love. Or maybe we have to call it love wisdom. Love demonstrating through light, a sacred lighted sphere. So we're on our way not to the personality demonstration of our planetary logos, but to its soul demonstration, which will be reinforced by the second ray soul, now increasingly operative, of the soul of Logos. Okay, so what was that all about? That was forms used in one of the three departments, and you know, it really helps to know which department we are connected with and where the source of that stream is coming from. And now all of this is part of the section called Form in Meditation. And we have so far visual forms and geometrical forms. We have mantric forms. We have formulas, set forms, things that just have to be known with exactitude. Now the next one is the three lines of approach. Well, in a way, we've just kind of studied that. It is a joy to do the Master's work, says Master M. Well, studying is part of it. I have to admit, you know, I'm biased towards the study part. Learning to be more balanced in meditation and just serving as I can. You know, we all have our emphasis. The three lines of approach from 100 years ago. As you will note, in continuation of that which we studied yesterday, there are three direct lines of contact between the higher and the lower, all finding their focal point through the same initiator, and all at the same time quite distinct in their method of approach. You know, there are the rewards of study. You know, if the wages of sin is death, then the wages of careful, prolonged, continuous study is illumination. And of course, by death, I mean the death of consciousness. All of this is serious business at long last. And there comes a time in our life when we realize it. If this is borne in mind, it will be apparent that each provides for the man whose egoic note is one of the three. So, note is the egoic note that is initially responsible for the method of approach, even building the Antikorana. When you use one of those words of power, you know, like, I assert the fact, or I see the greatest light, or purpose itself am I, etc. You use it on the note, or the color, or the ray of your causal body, egoic lotus, of your ego. And, you know, in occultism, the word ego just does not mean what it usually means. To the normal psychologist, we have to specify, like, the lower ego, i.e. the personality, when we want the word egoic to mean something lower. Otherwise, it does mean the consciousness within the causal body, egoic lotus, you know, on the higher mental plane, especially subplanes 2 and 3. So it will be apparent that each of these lines of approach provides for the man whose egoic note is one of the three, or a department of the third, 4, 5, 6, 7, the line of least resistance, and the path whereby he may most easily approach the ultimate, whatever that ultimate really is. For us, you know, relatively speaking, it's got to be the planetary logos or even the solar logos. And note 7, lines of approach. Always there are under the three, the four. And remember that we don't always have to change that egoic note into a ray of aspect. There are high initiates on rays 4, 5, 6, 7, and they have not changed their egoic ray to 1, 2, 3. He discusses that, you know, that for instance, there are ray 4 souls that have become ray 2, but there are also ray 4 souls that just remain on the fourth ray. Some of the intricacies of the ray science. Okay. It is fundamentally a matter of dealing with various states of consciousness. And here it is that the great ones so powerfully assist the student. And if we could just be humble enough with a sense of adjusted right proportion to realize how much we stand in debt to the great ones and how much they have to offer. And as Master Moria says, why do you insist on your own way when it fails and ours succeed? It doesn't mean we can't be original, etc. But when we find advice, suggestions, even sometimes like commands from Master M, and we don't obey, we refuse to obey at our peril, or at least we invoke retardation, which none of us really wants. Through meditation adjusted to the desired line, the student can control step by step the various immediate states that lie between him and his goal. He rises by means of various focal points of force. Let's call them, in a way, points of tension, but also rises through the cultivation of the different chakras and their opening. These focal points may be his higher self, they may be his master, they may be an ideal, what? Image of himself, perhaps? Or just an ideal? But they are only steps upon the ladder whereby expansions of consciousness are obtained, and the man is enabled to extend the periphery of his consciousness until he gradually embraces all and merges at last with the monad, and later with the all-self, the logos himself. By this, he may mean the solar logos. Now, is it the all-self? Well, it's certainly an aspect of the all-self. So, it's a science, isn't it? And of course, as we get better at understanding the science, we can wield it as if it were an art form. It's like a science is an art when it is intuitively wielded, when the knowledge is intuitively wielded. But that comes with familiarity and right application and will to serve, you know, practice makes perfect, and we just get better at what we do as we practice. We make our mistakes, we correct our mistakes, we try again, we keep on correcting until our knowledge turns into an art. An art is not necessarily something less than a science. It's a maybe an infallible intuitive application of the knowledge that the science reveals. Somehow the great quest and all the stages within it are hinted in these paragraphs, and we learn a certain moderation and acquiescence to the system so that we tread the path carefully and according to the rules and do not rush and avoid the pitfalls of carelessness. So the focal points can be any center of energy, higher self, triad, master, various chakras. They are only steps upon the ladder whereby the expansions of consciousness are obtained. And the man is enabled to extend the periphery. There's Jupiter extending the periphery of his consciousness until he gradually embraces all. Now, admittedly, that's a very secondary approach. We're told that the secondary type destroys the causal body through ever greater inclusiveness until he includes the entire entourage, as the Tibetan says. Everything around him, nothing is left out. He knows that all of it is part of the all-self, and even more authentically, each and every part, because of the indivisibility of the all-self, is the all-self. And those are, you know, strange paradoxical concepts, but you're looking upon a world divided by illusion. And although in the Mahamaya, the divisions are presented to our perception, there really is no division, no real division, and no separativeness. So we need that kind of a dual consciousness there, aware of the non-divisibility of every presentation to our consciousness, and also of the apparent divisibility. Have to handle both. Both. We grow up through the handling of the apparent divisibility. But eventually, underlying all of that apparent divisibility is the non-divisible. It's like the zero underlying the one. As in the case with Blavatsky, we never know quite the scope that the Tibetan is indicating. You know, usually the all-self would be the universal self, the grand entirety in a universe. But here he puts a boundary on it and says, well, we're dealing with the logos. For practical purposes, the all-self. For the sake of clarity, the Tibetan goes on, and in order to satisfy the craving of the concrete mind for differentiation. Feels like I've just been dealing with that subject. These three departments are pictured as distinct and separated from the other, though having their points of contact. In reality, apart from the illusion that the mind always sets up through its native tendency towards perceived divisibility, the three are one, and the seven are but blended parts of one synthetic whole. They all interface and intermingle. Interesting, though, about the concrete mind's craving for differentiation. Think about that. You know, people caught in revelatory yet intellectual illusion. Proud of it for several lives, having abandoned the strictly emotional devotional approach, but it's a trap too. The mind slays the real because the real is non-divisible. But from another point of view, the mind can reveal the real and show where the illusions, the misinterpretations occur. The illusion that the mind always sets up. There's something to think about. Lest we become too enamored of the mind, especially the dividing mind. Somewhere through the heart, you can look at anything, hear anything, and know it's all the same thing. As it's said in the Divine Pimander, the only one thing. I'd like some of these turns of phrase to satisfy the craving of the concrete mind for differentiation. You ever wonder why everything has to be so divided and subdivided? But of course, when we study the Mahamaya, we've got to do that. Otherwise, we're not going to learn about exactly about the interactions within the Mahamaya. By Mahamaya, I basically mean the universe and all its apparent differentiations, any universe. So much of this is predicated upon the ongoingness of the great breath. From the stanzas of Jian, and maybe this came, you know, from the libraries of Shambhala. Wonder how much a library card costs. Maybe everything, at least in terms of the personality. It'll cost you your whole personality to get a library card in the great library of Shambhala. All the three departments are but necessary parts of one organization over which the Lord of the world rules. So we see differentiation and we see the synthesis of it. They are but the executive's offices in which the business of our planet is handled, and each office is dependent upon the other offices, and all work in the closest collaboration. I guess he tries to put it in language that will appeal to the businessman or to the intelligent thinker in the world of business. But it's nice to know how things are organized, even though the things that are organized aren't real in the ultimate sense. But we have to know how things are organized. Otherwise, why call the hierarchy the society of organized and illumined minds? Notice the mental emphasis, the emphasis on light, and the emphasis on organization. The man who finds himself on one line has to remember that in time and before perfection is achieved, that's the number four going upwards, he must realize the synthesis of the whole. Maybe Buddhic realization is the first, or at least, you know, apprehension via pure reason. Technically, the word realization occurs on the fifth subplane, counting from above, of the Atmic plane, but still you can use it in a general sense. He must grasp it as a fact, past all questioning and not just as a mental concept. This is it. I assert the fact, I see the fact. The fact presents itself to me as real, not just I spout the word. And in his meditation, there will eventually come a point when this realization of the essential unity will be his, and he will know himself as a fragment of the vast whole. And I might say yet another step. He will know himself as the whole within every fragment. And he will know himself to be every fragment and the whole simultaneously. You know, it gets into Vedanta. Maybe it goes too far to be practical for most. But it does stimulate that heart apprehension of infusception, I call it, which is the, you know, perception of unity regardless of the number of differentiations also perceived within that unity. It's a way of solving in consciousness the contrast between the one and the many. And there's a lot of the third ray and second ray in that solution. And we do eventually have to solve it. In these three departments, the method of approach to the head of the department is meditation, and the means whereby the student puts himself on rapport with the essential life of that department, it is all a matter of terms, differ. With the essential life of that department, the means differ. A line within the form manifests as a result of meditation in three different ways. The results of meditation, as demonstrated in terms of character, if I may so express it, are really the same aspects of manifestation under different terms and conditions. And let me tabulate these for you. Every time the number three is mentioned, I think green. Maybe I'm just hopelessly looking for the right color. Trying to, and never quite satisfied that I found it. So the means differ. And we just have to be rock solid sure of the means we're going to use. Exactitude of knowledge is needed. Even though one realizes that the knowledge is only relative and basically maha mayavik. And how do we approach? Meditation. The possibilities inherent in meditation are seldom fully realized, but okay, eventually we realize we have a great instrument at our disposal, and we cultivate it. It's not just, you know, close your eyes and drift off or, you know, get a nice feeling or whatever. It's very exacting, the real meditation we're talking about here. And certain forms have to be used to make certain contacts. And I'll just put that in. Certain forms have to be used to make reliably certain contacts. Now, sometimes contacts just come out of the blue, but we want to make of this a science so that when we are entitled to set up some kind of rapport or even request, we use the right means, reliably, efficiently. All right, so if I may so express it, we have the same aspects of manifestation under different terms or conditions. Let's see here. The results of meditation as demonstrated in terms of character, if I may so express it, are really the same aspects of manifestation under different terms or conditions. When we get used to the relativity of the word and of speech, we will not make differentiations which prevent synthesis. There is such a thing as an articulated synthesis. It all is distinct and yet it's all together. And there is such a thing as a kind of a differentiation which stands as a wall or many walls against the possibility of perceiving synthesis and perceiving oneself as the synthesis. In the differentiation between the words as and with, there's quite a distinction. Now let me just see, I've been doing this without a microphone. Hello? Test, test. All right, I think that will work. Fortunately, I do have a microphone on the computer. And sometimes I just, you know, I've been wearing this headset for no good reason, because the microphone hasn't been plugged in. But there's so many things to remember at an advanced age. All right. So let me tabulate them for you. The same aspects of manifestation under different terms or conditions. The line of the Manu, force, strength, power to rule. I think you know you've seen a very good example of that in the behavior of Nelson Mandela, chastened by 27, 28 years of incarceration. And extraordinary how he emerged. You see it in the line of Lincoln. You see it FDR. You see it in Churchill. All different characters, maybe some different rays, but the first ray line is the line of the Manu. They are heads of state and successful ones. Ataturk also. Force, strength, power to rule. They don't have to be dictators. They don't have to abuse their power. Because they are insecure, they don't have to force their way upon others. They are not totalitarian. They have a great humanity, and somehow, maybe every one of them is a second ray monad on some level, regardless of the first ray soul. Not quite sure about Churchill. I feel it with FDR. I feel it with Mandela. Well, you know, clarification along those lines will come. The lion of the bodhisattva. Magnetism, attraction, healing. The Christ, the great exemplar of this. And let's remember Sanat Kumara, the greatest example of the teaching ray upon our planet. The line of the Mahachohan, electricity in its three aspects, synthesis in its articulated aspect, and organization. So I want to say synthesis, articulated, or differentiated. Articulated. Come on now. That's different from what I might call the homogeneous synthesis. Synthesis throughout articulation. Articulation in synthesis. It's the one and the many again, the many and the one. Interesting about electricity, there are so many varieties of it, but it does take the triangle, plus, minus, and the result in the central position, the form of neutral electricity. So, you know, DK gives us different terms at different times, and these terms just give us different angles of vision, and the angles of vision expand our understanding. I seek here to point out that the effect in the life of the student of meditation on one of these three lines will be as enumerated above, though all, of course, colored and modified by his personality ray and by the point attained in evolution. Well, you know, with Roosevelt, I feel first-ray soul, second-ray personality. I don't feel that with Churchill. I find first-ray soul, fourth-ray personality with Ataturk, not sure, you know, but maybe more the seventh-ray personality. I guess, you know, I could include on a lesser, to a lesser degree, Mannerheim, Marshall Mannerheim here in Finland, who basically saved his nation from takeover by the Soviets. First-ray, seventh-ray personality. First-ray soul, seventh-ray personality. When it comes to Mandela, I believe first-ray soul, second-ray personality. Seems like, you know, the second or the fourth ray always gets in there to soften, to sweeten, to humanize the application of the first ray. Churchill had a powerful, I think, fourth ray personality. I made a mistake. I crossed over Hitler and Churchill, the opponents, in my book, and I said Hitler, fourth-ray personality, but I think fourth-ray mind and sixth-ray personality with his first-ray soul, sixth-ray personality with Churchill, because he was such a great orator and born in Sagittarius. I know sixth-ray was important, but I don't think it was his, it's got to be his, well, astral body, but not his personality. I think that's fourth-ray. Napoleon had the first ray and the fourth ray together. And I think in an earlier demonstration, Alexander the Great, whatever he turns into, had the first ray and the fourth ray again. First ray soul, fourth ray personality. And you get some, and Patton, well, I think the same. first-rate soul, maybe fourth-rate personality, makes tremendous warriors, you know. And in terms of the really popular leader, the first and second rays together can account for that. Little, you know, side journey. But that's how it goes with me these days. If you will study the three words applied to the three lines, you will find it very illuminating. I seek not to enlarge the mental body, but to train the intuition, illumination, as the knows it, the transcendental mind. Maybe that's the mind you get when you lose all your teeth. Anyway, this is interesting. It's not for the cultivation of the mental body. There's plenty of that in the teaching, but for his closer students to really train the intuition. You study the three words, force, strength, power to rule, magnetism, attraction, healing, electricity, synthesis, organization. I'm remembering also, I'm not sure if it's necessarily page 600 in Cosmic Fire, but there are these, the blending power. It talks about the blending power of the third logos. Well, let's just go there, you know, I think. That'd be the way to do it. And let's see if the Treatise on Cosmic Fire would allow me to do this. But there are some interesting words here. Third logos. And one, two. There it is. Page 433. All right. And the magical force of the seventh logos, the aggressive fire of the sixth logos. Yeah. Let me, so you can see it. Magical, aggressive, the illuminating light of the fifth logos, the harmonizing life of the fourth logos, the blending power of the third logos, the unifying heat of the second logos, the dynamic electricity of the first logos. Very illuminating page, page 433 of a treatise on cosmic fire. Okay. Now going back to where we were, these words. Dynamic electricity, unifying heat, blending power. Maybe different angles of vision than we are used to considering when considering these rays. Okay. And let's make sure that we are, yes, we are. That's the one disadvantage of using Zoom. You know, it has many advantages, but you have to make sure that the page you're talking about is up and visible. And with the GoToMeeting, it's just there, whatever's on your screen. So we have to study the three words, but I want to add to it, I want to add dynamic electricity. I want to add unifying heat. Unifying heat. How about? And I want to add, what do I want to add? Blending power. I want to add blending power. How can you benefit, you know, by learning these words? Just, they provide different angles of understanding. That's the thing about the third ray. You know, you can look at things from every point on the sphere. And the vision of what you see will be different. And then in all those points simultaneously, you will get a completed point of view. And you will be the all-seeing eye. Maybe you have to be within the thing you're looking at to be the all-seeing eye in the understanding of any energy center. All right, now I just have to check. Yes, we're okay. So these words demonstrate the law as working through the three groups and working out into active expression in the three worlds of the due following of the desired line. What's above, what's below? What's above, what's below? Both. Each has its specific forms whereby those results are achieved. And the time is coming when the rudiments of these forms, the first fundamental formulas, you know, how complex and variegated it is, will be given to students deemed ready, who have done the necessary preliminary work. No way to avoid the necessary preliminary work. No way. And if it seems too arduous, too rigorous, well, it only seems so. Because as DK says rather dryly, the rewards of, well, you know, occultism, mastering the ages of wisdom, are adequate. When, you know, we as aspiring students think they're just fantastic. But DK, it's a little tongue-in-cheek there. Adequate to the effort spent. So all of this is trying to help us understand along which line, along which line we are approaching. And where we belong, basically. We have to be in the right place in the right time doing the right thing. Seems like that's kind of the law of the Manu. instead of barking up the wrong tree, you know? So here is a little bit about the line of the Manu on page 170 here. We might here somewhat indicate the approximate method and lay down certain rules which will serve to elucidate when the time comes. This teacher is preparing the way for the future when further revelation will be given. He's doing that with a treatise on white magic. And, you know, he's doing it here. He has to proceed from the general to the particular. And in this second presentation, he's giving a lot that is general. And maybe in this set of bridging treatises, he will simply continue to give what is general compared to the orally transmitted details. This first line is especially the line of government, of racial development, maybe no comma needs to be there, of working in and with the matter of all forms on all planes in human evolution. It is, as I have said before, you know, in discipleship, rather in the destiny of the nations, it is occultism. The occultist, the first ray line, the line of the occultist. He gives it, you know, second ray mystic, third ray magician, interesting. Fourth ray artist, fifth ray scientist, sixth ray, I think, devotee, and seventh ray ritualist. So he differentiates between magic and ritualism, although obviously ritualism has plenty of magic in it. And the seventh ray is considered the ray of magic, but in this particular chart, he differentiates. I believe it's in the destiny of the nations. And do I know that for sure? Well, I think so, but it may not be easy to reach. And it'd be easy to find. Let's see. Okay, and so mystic artist. It's not going to get me what I want. It's there, I know. Well, it is there. That's it. All right, let me show it to you. The page 145. Ray 1, force, energy, action, the occultist. Ray 2. Consciousness, expansion, initiation, the true psychic, not the mystic, the psychic. Okay, I'm glad I looked at it to clarify that. Number 3, ray 3, adaptation, development, evolution, the magician. Ray 4, vibration, response, expression, the artist. Ray 5, mentation, knowledge, science, the scientist. Ray 6, devotion, abstraction, idealism, the devotee. Ray 7, incantation, magic, ritual, the ritualist. So magic is included. Yes, I've made that visible. Okay. So the first line, occultism. It emphasizes the hierarchical method. It embodies the divine autocracy, which is not, you know, the same as being a selfish autocrat, as we have appearing these days on the world stage. Not the same as the selfish autocrat. And it is the line whereby our solar logos imposes his will on men, even though he is on the second ray predominantly. It is closely linked to the lords of karma, maybe absolute sonship somehow leading to the cosmic logoic plane, perhaps, or cosmic atmic. And it is through the Manu's department that the law of cause and effect is wielded. Saturn and the Manu and the first ray. Saturn has much of the first ray in it. The four lords of karma work closely with the Manu, the Maharajas, the four kings, for they impose the law, and he manipulates the forms of men, of continents, of races, and of nations, so that law may be duly, that law may be duly worked out. Notice how often the word manipulation is associated with first ray activities, not just third ray activities. Well, I suppose we all manipulate. We all arrange things. It's just a question of how it is done and for what purpose. It emphasizes the hierarchical method, divine autocracy, which in a way is ending with, well, not ending, you can't say that, but peaking with Sanat Kumara. And of course it goes higher still with the planetary logos in its entirety and with the solar logos eventually. So the great will of the solar logos has to be authoritative, no matter what his ray may be. It's in the next solar system, I believe it will be the first ray personality, but the soul will remain on the second ray. And karma has this very powerful ray one component, and the Manu works with karma. Okay, he's going to try, you know, maybe we've been reading a lot in the books, and, you know, this seems like old hat, but we have to be careful about that old hat, because it may mean that we've had too superficial an approach to what has been written. In fact, that we have not paid attention when the Tibetan said, "Read my words more carefully." The man, therefore, who attempts through meditation, again, a reminder, okay. To contact these powers, to rise to union by these means, and to attain the consciousness of the will aspect works under set rules, rises from point to point under due forms, and broods ever on the law and its workings. Is that your way? I mean, we all have to pay attention to law. And if we are on the seventh ray, we will also. But every ray has to pay attention to law, although some rays, ray types, are less skillful at it than others, or it happens later for them. He seeks to understand, he discriminates and studies. Note, he studies. He is occupied with the concrete and its place in the divine plan. He admits the fact of the indwelling life, but concentrates primarily on the method and form of manifestation. So clear, isn't it, what he's saying here? The basic rules of expression and of government occupy his attention, and by studying the rules and laws, and by seeking to comprehend, he necessarily contacts the ruler. And I suppose Monad or Senakumara, from stage to stage he rises, from the ruler of the microcosm in the three worlds to the group egoic and its focal point, a master. From the ruler of the group, he rises to the Manu, the ruler of the department wherein he has his place. Thence to the ruler of the world, later, notice, to the planetary locus. Herein, wow, a really important differentiation. Okay, this is a note, a vital differentiation. And here we have, let's put it in, a vital between the Lord of the world and the planetary locus. So there you have it. I mean, they certainly are, sometimes considered to be the same being, and through emanation in a way they are, but the Sanatkumara is definitely an extension of the planetary logos, and thence to the solar logos. So there are many rulers through which in relation to which he ascends. You know, and you can tell here, it's all red, you know. But maybe I'll break it up a bit. He seeks to understand, he discriminates and studies, you know, third ray and second ray he uses, of course. Foster Bailey, on the first ray, he did plenty of studying, that's for sure. He admits the fact of the indwelling life, but concentrates primarily on its method and form. So here I'll use the purple, closest I can come to having the right color, violet. setting the rules and laws, and he contacts the ruler. Whatever the ruler may be of the particular sphere of activity in which he is temporarily working. It's good, isn't it, to see something a little more detailed about how these types work. Then we have the line of the Bodhisattva. How they ascend, you know, how they, a little more detail on how they ascend. Because one day ascension will be ours, we too will ascend. Okay. Now let's look at the line of the Bodhisattva. This is the line of religion and philosophy, considering philosophy as the love of wisdom, and of the development of the indwelling life. Gosh, do I dare put this in blue? If I just had something between this blue and this blue, if you can see these, but I don't. I don't. Anyway, it deals with consciousness. within the form, more than the form itself. It is the line of least resistance for the many, and maybe this implies the present second preponderance of second ray monads. It embodies the wisdom aspect of the Logos and is the line whereby his love is manifested in a predominant fashion. The solar system being itself a direct expression of the Logos and of his love aspect, this, our present solar system, all in manifestation is based upon it. Love in rule, love abounding, love in activity, with first, second, and third ray, rule, first ray, abounding, expansion, second ray, activity, third ray. But in the second line, the above manifestation is supreme and will eventually absorb all the others, maybe via Neptune, our great second ray monadic planet, a planet of synthesis. So, forgive me, I'm going to make it blue. My favorite color. Okay. So the life within the form, consciousness within the form, rather than the form itself. Rule, love abounding, love in rule. It's amazing how he expresses the same thing in different ways. Love abounding, love in activity. Abounding, what a great word for the second ray. Rule, first ray. Also the seventh. But in this second line, the above manifestation is supreme, especially at this time, when our solar Logos is working through a second-rate personality, which corresponds to his second-rate soul. And so a tremendous emphasis in this fifth solar system, the second major solar system, on the second ray. The line of the Bodhisattva. The approach. Well, so many of us who are in the theosophical work and the Tibetans' work, we just love the occult philosophy. And we are teachers, healers, maybe the religious types, you know, not given so much to care exactingly about the form, at least the outer form. Although, you know, sometimes there's this inter-ashramic trading and you're on loan to really learn something and help. Foster Bailey was obviously on loan to the second ray ashram. I think Daniel Enten, who did such a great job with Agni Yoga, was on loan to the first ray ashram, at least according to what he said, about relating most to Kutumi. It's a balancing factor. Because one ray can't handle it all and you need supplementals, you know. So that a reasonable balance is preserved. So maybe you'll find yourself ascending here and maybe, you know, let us think of Neptune as a great second ray synthesizing planet. He may not belong to our solar system. I mean, that's an enigmatic thing, and his distance from the sun doesn't correspond to Bode's law of distances, but there are other ways. My teacher Charles Jane used to say that we can account for Neptune's position. I couldn't follow it exactly, but he had some mathematical thing worked out. The man who meditates on this line seeks ever. Now notice who meditates. This is all different modes of approach through meditation. That's what we're talking about here. Modes of approach to a great Lord and beyond through meditation. All the specifics that we need will be given. Right now, we need the foundation and we need character, refinement. We need some pretty simple things, and constancy and consistency and reliability and loyalty, and we need those things. And then, when the time is right, the impartation of the practical methods will be given to us, whether from the master or, as I said earlier, from somehow soul impression or soul impartation, because the soul knows. The man who meditates on this line seeks to enter into the consciousness of all that breathes, and by graded expansions of consciousness to arrive, I mean, graded expansions of consciousness and initiations as the science of initiation is the teaching method of those upon the second ray from EP1. I'm paraphrasing. And by graded expansions of consciousness, you know, which obviously that's what initiations are, to arrive eventually at the all consciousness. He's, you know, stopping with the soul of logos, I think. When you use a word like all, it's pretty big, you know, so. But being practical. And to enter into the life of the Supreme Being. And thus he enters into the life of all within logoic consciousness, probably the soul of logos. But, of course, the universe is much bigger, as there are these beings to whom the soul of logos is just as a crystal. But it doesn't pay, you know, to go too far into the completely unverifiable. And there's much about the higher initiations which can at least verify something concerning our solar logos. Entering into the consciousness of all that breathes. Maybe we've, you know, as we practice identification, we can somewhat do that. And that's one of the reasons in one of our online classes, so to speak, that we study and practice methods of identification. Arriving at the all consciousness. And the Supreme Being here in this context probably means solar logos. He broods not so much upon the law as upon the life that is governed by that law. And what do we mean by life? You know, the what do we mean by that? Maybe the inner God, you know. The what we are within the form. Through love he comprehends, and through love he blends himself first with his ego, then with his master, and next with his group, egoic, and then with all groups, till finally he enters into the consciousness of the deity himself, solar logos. Gosh, I just don't seem to be able to find any other color than blue. And maybe you'll wish I would just leave it all alone and not worry about color. But this fourth ray thing in me, you know, has to be expressed. So, you know, is life governed by law? Or is law as an expression of will governed by life considered as being? It all depends on how we want to interpret words. So is this your line? Do you recognize anything here? When in the beginning of the book, he around, you know, somewhere in there, 15, 16, 17, 18, he deals with the methods of breaking the causal body, and this sounds very much like the second ray method. Let's see here. I wonder if I can find that. Maybe I can find it. The word I'm looking for is entourage. And there's just one. And this is incorrect. I should have made this green because this one's about the third ray. But what's above it, and I'll try to show it to you as I might always forget. When the egoic ray is the second, or love wisdom ray, the path of least resistance lies along the line of expansion, of a gradual inclusion. It is not so much a driving forward, first ray, as it is a gradual expanding from an inner center to include the entourage, the environment, the allied souls, and the affiliated groups of pupils under some one master until all are included in the consciousness. Carried to the point of achievement, this expansion results in the final shattering, wobbling apart, I guess, of the causal body at the fourth initiation. In the first instance achieved on the power ray, via the power ray, the driving forward and the forcing upward has a like result. The open channel admitted the downflow force of fire from the spirit, and the causal body in time is equally destroyed. But if only I could get the blue I want. Maybe someone can teach me how to do that. When you find the blue you love, it's really, it's really a great moment. But here I'm only given certain colors, aqua, and not the real blue that I'm looking for. Maybe more a royal blue. Okay. So we apply. But you can see why what we're studying right now reminded me of this particular section in the books, page 15, 16. Okay. Now the Maha Chohan's ray, the line of the Maha Chohan. At least you can see through the green. I never knew that I would be so fixated on the right color. But okay, the line of the Maha Chohan. This is the line of mind or intelligence. Interesting that yellow is sometimes given as the color of the third ray monad and not just the fourth ray. So yellow or green? Green definitely on the third ray. Yellow having to do actually with third, fourth, and fifth ray, which gives me the hint that yellow is associated with Mercury and that Mercury is associated with the third, fourth, and fifth rays. This is the line of mind, of intelligence or intelligence, of knowledge and of science. It is the line of abstract mind and of archetypal ideas, We're not dealing with concrete mind so much. The man is still brooding. The man broods not so much upon the law, not so much upon the life, as upon the effects of both in manifestation, and upon the reason why. In manifestation. So this is the ray of manifestation in a large and general sense. And how did it all come to manifest? The man on this fivefold line, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, ever asks why and how and whence, and seeks to synthesize, to comprehend, and to make the archetypes and ideals facts in manifestation. He really brings it down and through. He broods, there we go again. He broods on the ideals as he senses them. He aims at contacting the universal mind, Atma, but also the mind on the cosmic mental plane one day. He aims at contacting the universal mind, at wresting its secrets from it and giving them expression. Einstein here, let us say. It is the line, I would say also, of business organization, the line also in which the artists, musicians, scientists, and workers of the world have their place when you consider the subsidiary rays of Ray 3. The spirits of love and activity pass much time in each of its five departments before passing on the lines of love and power. The spirits, that's not used casually, or monads of love and activity, pass much time in each of its departments, probably through expression on the personality, or maybe even, well, for the variety, we need the personality for the more rapid changes. Spend much time in the five departments before passing on to the lines of love and of power. Now, some of them do pass, and some of them do not, it appears. DK at one point tells us about the difference between those on the fourth ray who have moved to the second and those who have stayed on the fourth ray. Or maybe those upon the second ray, well, they have to come from somewhere, and those on the second ray who have been on the fourth ray. Not everybody passes to soul one or two, and not everybody passes to monad one or two, but everybody does pass eventually into the liberated monadic state of 1, 2, 3 on the logoic plane. At least that is how I see it. One has to try to speculate intelligently about these things and then be corrected as time passes. So it's all about manifestation with this ray, with this line of approach. And it's not enough just to have the power to do something, or it's not enough to have the motivation through love to do something. It's necessary to have the ability to bring through. The word comprehend is here used. This man on the fivefold line, attribute and one ray of aspect, the third seeks to make ideals, facts, and manifestation. Others are satisfied to know and to impart what they know. Others demand that the manifestation occur. Which are you? Toward what is your emphasis? Notice brooding is found on both array lines, and intuition is needed. Intuition is available to every ray line, eventually. Some accepting it more readily, some deflecting it more readily, but eventually open to all. Giving, so expression is the key. The will to express, actually, the will to expression is the seventh ray line of the will. But the third ray and the seventh ray are so closely related, you know, as the major financial rays. And also they are said to give expression to the Jewish force with its strong emphasis upon manifestation, because so much of it is coming from the previous major solar system where manifestation, the outer form, was the key thing. So you notice the subtlety here when he says the spirits of love and activity. He uses the word spirit. It means monad, I think. Pass much time on each of its five departments. How could you pass time except maybe through personality or occasionally a change of egoic ray? Like if you change from the sixth to the second egoic ray, you would pass time in the department of religion and idealism, and also time in the department of unification, of cohesion. But of course, that would be a ray of aspect. So, you know, maybe particularly the personality determines how a spirit of a certain kind, see, spirit and spiritual is contrast with divine, but sometimes spirit just does mean monad. Oftentimes spiritual takes us into the spiritual triad, but not into the monadic realm, whereas the word divine does. It all depends on context. A word is a word, but can mean different things in different contexts. In meditation, the man takes some ideal. So let's remember here, rays 6 and 3 are closely related. This was 1 and 2 and 2 and 4. So there's a lot of idealism on the third ray, especially when the sixth ray has been the means of being led to expression upon the third ray. Expression upon the third ray can also occur via the fourth ray. And you would think via ray 7 and ray 5, but those apparently are rarer circumstances. Master R, though, took his initiates of what, second and third degree, onto the third ray with him from the seventh ray. And it says by special dispensation. So we take some ideal, some part of the divine plan, some phase of beauty and of art, some scientific or racial problem, and by brooding over it and by the employment of lower mind, finds out all that can be known and sensed. Here's somehow I would I would try to use the orange color, but I don't have that choice. Though there must be a way. So, you know, focusing on one of the rays of attribute here, the plan ray 3, beauty ray 4, science ray 5, he doesn't deal with ray 6 and 7 exactly, but of course, if it's an ideal, it's ray 6 in a way. And he wants to inquire via ray 5, everything that can be known and sensed. Then, having done all that, he seeks to raise the consciousness still higher, and we might say from 5 to 3, till he taps the source of illumination and gains the light and information required. He mounts likewise by entering into the consciousness of those greater than himself. And so much from the point of view of love, not so much from the point of view of love as in the second line, but from an admiration and joy in their achievement. Ray 6, admiration. But not only Ray 6. Admiration and joy. Okay. And gratitude for what they have given to the world. Gratitude. And Master Moria essentially says that with gratitude you have the best fires. And with gratitude so much can be accomplished. So they can assess what it has taken to do that. And they really want to aspire to be able to, in many cases, do the same. You might say, well, the Christ was the initiate Jesus's great ideal, we're told. And when we hear the stories of Aristotle and Plato, and understand that Aristotle was the last student remaining in one of Plato's very long lectures, we understand that admiration that can occur. Obviously, Aristotle had much of the sixth ray, and well, I've seen it, you know, people in mathematics or the arts or the sciences having a great exemplar before them, an ideal that they try to fulfill. They try to be like that person. So gratitude for what they have given to the world. This is, you know, we're talking about the line of approach along the Mahachohan's line. And devotion to that same idea that impels them to action. So there we have Ray 6. We are speaking. Of the method of approach of those upon the third line. Is this your line of approach? Is it some mixture where your subrays give you a real feeling for a line of approach which is secondary or ancillary to yours, but still significant? We're all approaching, and we have to know how we are approaching. Therefore, you will see from even the most superficial study of the above three lines how apparent it is that all the sons of men are rising. Even if they don't know it, and even if they're running into difficulty, and even if they're making mistakes whereby they will learn some often very hard lessons, they are rising. And you sense in your own life this rising. Every once in a while, you know, you can break through into that sense of rising. There may be oppression for a long period of time, uncertainty, a clouded consciousness, and then suddenly, you know, aha, or that feeling of the wind being at your back. Even the ones so apt to be despised, who are the active workers of the world, yeah, and often on Ray 1, may, in their place and through their devotion to the ideals of work or science or even a business organization, be just as far advanced as the more highly considered ones who demonstrate more patently the love aspect of the divine self. So, you know, don't judge alone by the apparent pleasantness of love. There are other ways to ascend. We're told about first rate types, for instance, they're so often misunderstood because the first ray has not really entered in any extensive way into our planet because we are non-sacred and the monadic ray is occultly non-effective. So it's a bit foreign, and you know, sometimes when Ray 3 enters, one feels envy because the rich are rich and one may be in a poorer position. But it's still doing good work. We couldn't do without the representatives of the various ashrams, even though they tend to be misunderstood by those on different rays. What does it say somewhere that the rays, you know, lower down on the mountain At first, the rays hate and kill each other. And then they rise towards the peak and begin to understand each other. Or even a business organization, apparently he's saying, you know, business is not too lovable, but you get these great philanthropists. You know, maybe it's guilt and maybe it's really service. You think of Andrew Carnegie and all the libraries that he got organized and founded, probably from a deep desire for learning, you know. And, you know, you think of fifth ray types who start great methods of study and research. They have an equal part to play, even though due to the bias of the second ray soul on our planet, we perhaps prefer those who demonstrate the love aspect quite visibly. It's trying to move ahead here, but yeah, there we go. Forget not that activity is just as divine and just as fundamentally an expression of the All Father. He's finding different terms to give people entree into what he means, are just as fundamentally an aspect of the All Father as love in sacrifice, and even more so than what we now know as power. For the power aspect is as yet not comprehended by any of you, nor will it be until a further manifestation, and by that I think he hints at the third major solar system. So we have many prejudices, and sometimes we are the victim of those prejudgments, and we don't even realize we are using them. But the Tibetan has a stop, and he calls attention to our tendencies to be biased for one thing over another, for one energy over another, when all are equally needed, though not necessarily equally needed at the same time, but given a span of years, all will have to play their part. Now let's see how long this one is. Oh, it's a long one. Really long. Well, it would be impossible to finish at this time. But maybe one can start a little bit. I try to keep things separate and distinct, but sometimes when you have enough energy to go ahead, and we'll see whether I do, you do want to take advantage of it. Oh, it's a long one indeed. So anyway, forms used in calling devas and elementals. Oh, there's a lot of interest in this. Even though there's probably a lot of danger in this. I remember how Aleister Crowley, he was just so excited about invoking some demon or other, as if the very fact of being able to do this proved to be a worthy accomplishment. But in fact, you know, there was really no need. No need. Just a demonstration of power. Which was more inhibitory of the good than useful. Because, you know, it got many people started on the wrong path, or a path of obstructive invocation. So in taking up the last two points that you have enumerated, 6 and 7, who's you? We shall be able to deal with them as one, elementals and devas. For the mantrams and forms used in contacting the devas, angels, or builders, and in calling in the elementals or subhuman forms of existence, whereas devas can be equal to humans and superhumans, superhuman or on a par with the human level. Calling in of elementals or subhuman forms of existence are practically the same and should in these letters be counted as such. As a preliminary step, let us be quite clear wherein lies the distinction between the two groups and, well, such an important one, as many people may be involved in summoning elementals, they don't realize it, rather than inviting devas of higher caliber to into a cooperative relationship. I think there are devas you cannot compel and some you must obey, he tells us. Others are to obey you. But it's tricky, you know, and you have to be exact in your use of forms and know why and how you are invoking. And it must be according to need. And the need must not just be personal desire, it must be real need associated with the advancement of the divine plan. The elementals are, in their essential essence, subhuman. All right. That's just a declarative statement. And there's just no color that's going to allow me to I'll just leave it like this. The fact that they can be contacted on the emotional plane is no guarantee that they are on the evolutionary path, because the involutionary path has to pass through also the emotional plane on its way to the turn to return on the physical plane. On the contrary, they are on the path of involution and on the downward arc. They are to be found on all planes. And the etheric elemental forms, such as the brownies, gnomes, and pixies, are well known. And they can be roughly divided into four groups. Well, naturally, you know, in the lower form of magic, this kind of information will be much sought. So elementals are subhuman, basically, and can be divided roughly into four groups. What are they? The elementals of earth, the elementals of water, the elementals of air, the elementals of fire. We've heard it. Usually we go astrologically, fire, earth, air, and water, but here we have a certain line of ascent, earth, water, air, as related to the mental plane, and fire maybe more related to the higher mental plane, but ultimately air is Buddhic and fire is mental. So elementals are found on all of these levels. And generally, they have to work under direction. In Atlantis, there were many, we are told, wars and attacks involving elemental forces that were sent out against one's enemy or enemies for personal reasons. Gradually, the methods were forgotten or withdrawn, and not in general resubmitted. So these elementals, they are the, brownies, gnomes, and pixies. Pixies. And I think there are people, you know, with the second sight, as they say, that will reveal these etheric forms. But, you know, they are etheric elemental forms. Maybe we don't expect them to be quite so concrete as usually described. They are the essence of things, if you could but realize it. They are the elemental things of the solar system in their four grades as we know them in this fourth cycle on the fourth or Earth planet. So they are related to the lower square, and thus the personality, the essence of things, if we could but realize it. So they carry about them the number four. Earth, water, air, and fire. He's got to have a reason for putting them in that order. And oftentimes in astrology, at least when dealing with air, we are dealing with mentality and maybe lower mentality, and fire maybe higher mentality. Well, that's the order in which he gives them. The devas are on the evolutionary path on the upward way. They are, as you know, the builders of the system working in graded and serried ranks. So they're very well organized and they are evolutionary. Even though some are lower and unconscious, still they are on the upward way. They are evolutionary. They are not being driven down into form, but they are building ever more fit forms for the expression of the divine plan, and they at first build under direction. Even the great Raja Lords are building, investing themselves in forms that are needed by Sanat Kumara to make possible his manifestation. Devas are to be found of the same rank as the planetary logoi and the rulers of the five planes of human evolution hold rank equal to that of a master of the seventh initiation. That's interesting. I used to think it was the sixth, but I think there are subsidiaries under these Rajadeva lords, which are of the sixth initiation. But here we have of rank equal to that of a master of the seventh initiation. And who are these devas equal to the planetary logoi? Who are they? Now, there are solar angels. Solar angels who hold rank above the solar logos. A solar angel must, and the solar logos has one. Note. Note that there are solar angels of rank higher than the solar logos, and from which all the other solar angels come forth as rays, you might say. Others are equal in development along their own line to a master of the fifth initiation. Then they work consciously and willingly with the masters of the occult hierarchy, as DK talks about certain green devas who have much to impart, and I think a violet deva, a green deva, about the healing arts. So others are equal to the fifth degree, and we wouldn't really know what that means in terms of their capabilities, but if the capabilities of a master are high, then we're going to believe that the capabilities of such devas is also very high. Right now, you know, we have to deal with those that are on the human levels. And the Christ is the teacher alike of devas and of men. Well, the devas have to be in need of his instruction, just the way certain men are. Well, maybe most every man. They can be found on all the lesser grades down to the little building devas who work practically unconsciously in their groups, building the many forms necessitated by the evolving life. So, giving a whole range of devic development. And, you know, maybe purple is our color. I'm sure there must be a way to get highlighting colors that have greater choice. So, you know, seventh initiation, Raja Lords, fifth initiation, Masters. I don't know what to call those devas. And I guess if there are devas of equal rank to a seventh degree initiate or a fifth, why should we exclude the sixth? We're told that, you know, Master M works with devas on the red and gold and white line, and KH on the second line of the blue and rose, and, well, healers maybe with green devas, and Master Jesus now with some violet devas, even though technically he's not on the seventh ray, but, you know, for purposes that we don't know about, maybe, you know, he works in that way when with those devas. And they're not necessarily low devas, they could be the higher ones. And the Christ could bring whole armies of angels, as he said. Don't you think I could call my Heavenly Father and he would send like an army of angels to my aid? So, an ever more intimate connection with the Deva Kingdom is achieved as the initiatory level of the human being advances. And if they work with high devas within the body of manifestation, or the emanatory effect of the high devas are the lower devas. So that would be the way that the master would reach the lower devas. He's not going to concern himself so much with the devas of small moment, unless he does so in great groups. Earlier, prior to my dictating these letters to you, you received one communication along the line of the mantric invocation of the elementals and the devas. The information given was correct as far as it went, and you may, if you wish, incorporate it here. So he seems like he is speaking to AAB as he is writing. I wonder what paper that was, or if he's now quoting it. This seems to be the kind of magical interplay in which people are most interested. And while very useful, maybe it's not as high as their aspiration could take them. But the whole matter of cooperating with the devas is utterly necessary. Okay, what does it say here? Force in evolution and force in individuation, in involution, are two different things. That is a preliminary statement. In the one, you have destruction, violence, blind elementary power at work. In involution, it is the elementals who do the most work, working blindly along the, as controlled by the builders. The work is constructive, cohesive, and gradually growing together. Harmony out of discord, beauty out of chaos. The lower kingdoms of the devas work guided by the great building devas, and all, and all move upward in ordered beauty from plane to plane, from system to system, universe to universe, obviously. Okay, so he is not calling our universe the grand entirety. Okay, therefore, in studying occult lore, well, so in the one, and this upon the path of evolution, you have destruction, violence, blind elementary powers at work. In involution, it is the elementals who do most of the work, working blindly along as controlled by the builders. This is going on all the time, and, just in the very fact of food, which is either keeping or decaying. You can see reverse tendencies. And when we're thinking about elemental essence, it does belong to the path of evolution. And on the path of involution, there's a lot of rending and tearing, but building of adequate forms. Okay, we have to remember two things. You control elemental forces. You know, when a hurricane's out of control, when a fire's out of control, you're running for your life. When great winds come and the trees are falling, the electrical lines are down, you're running for your life. And when you can change the path of a hurricane, perhaps, later, when you can seed the clouds if it's safe, when you can prevent the flooding and you can make sure that dangerous fires do not spread, you know, then you're in touch with the elementals. You cooperate with the devas. Now, this is a basic statement that many of us have heard. Okay. But this is, you know, these two statements are just very clear. And it's a bit like the statement that synthesis is, but unity must be created. It gives that relative understanding of the two. And here we have the relative understanding of elements, elemental forces, and of the devas, of which there are a huge range. As I said, those who must obey us, those with whom we cooperate, and those with whom we must obey, or whom we must obey. If you, in one, you dominate, in the other case, you endeavor to work with. You cannot control the activity aspect, or rather, you control through the activity aspect by the definite doing of certain things, by the preparation of certain ceremonies, for instance, through which certain forces can play. It is a replica on a tiny scale of what the third logos did in world making. Certain activities had certain results. Later on, revelations can be made as to the rites and ceremonies through which you can get in touch with the various elementals and control them. The ceremonial ray, by coming into incarnation at this time, is making things much easier along this particular line. Okay. It's getting late, you know, and I slip off into meditation deep. Of course, it's meditation. It has nothing to do with being drowsy, right? But when one goes on, one has to work his way through. So in one, you dominate. And when we're speaking of domination, we'll use the color red. And in the other, you endeavor to work with. So let's talk about cooperation with the color purple. Better violet, but okay, purple at the moment. And there are ways, outer ways, to do this. And the Masons will know this. The church will know this too. And I suppose the banded esoteric organisms will have their own methods as well. Fire elementals, water sprites, and the lower elementals can all be harnessed by rites. So fire elementals, what are they? Often salamanders, the sprites, and maybe we might call them undines, or is that a term used for devas? And the lower elementals still of earth, can all be harnessed by rites. Gosh, these forms are so effective. They have to be kept out of our hands. The rites are of three kinds. Protective rites, which concern your own protection, and you know that rule in white magic has to do with protective right to guard against certain devic reactions. Now, if I were to go here to a treatise on white magic and I don't know. Oh, that's Destiny of the Nations. I don't want that. I want treatise on white magic, and maybe the way to do that is to go to the end of the rays and initiations. But here are the rules right here, and let's see if I can find this for you. Is it number 11? Yeah, I think it's number 11. Three things the worker with the law must now accomplish. First, make sure that this is what you're getting. First, ascertain the formula which will confine the lives within the ensphering wall as you're building the thought form for manifestation. Pronounce the words which will tell them what to do and where to carry what has been made. And finally, utter forth the mystic phrase which will save him from their work. There it is. The mantram, the mystic phrase which will save him from their work. And this, I think, has a lot to do with working with the devas. So we need protective formulas. We need them. And he, every once in a while, he will give them. He gives a formula when dealing with glamour and the technique of light, you know. He tells us we had better use that formula. So, protective rights, which concern your own protection, not just words, but maybe actions too, because with a right, you get actions. Rights of appeal, which call and reveal the elementals. It seems that Leadbeater knew a lot about that when he was talking about the inner work of the church. And rights that control and direct them when summoned. Okay. So he's giving us a little bit about the techniques here. And notice a rite involves action. You know, you might be doing something with your hands, with your body form. With the creation of symbols with your body and attitudes. So, the control of these elementals, and I suppose even of devas, as in the white magical section I dealt with, is achieved through, among other things, protective rights. In working with the devas, you use the wisdom or love aspect, the second of the aspects, the building aspect. Now, this is a really important hint. Maybe there's just more command when working with the elementals, per se. But here the love aspect comes in. Through love and longing, you reach them. And your first step, as you are on the path of evolution, as they are, is to get in touch with them. For together you must work in the future for the guidance of the elemental forces and the helping of humanity. Clear enough, right? A different method of approach. It's not that the devas don't have the third ray. You know, there's a place where we see man on the first and second ray and the devas on the second and third, but they do have something in common on the second ray. Through love and longing, you reach them. So obviously, they are involved in the fulfillment of prayer. And your first step, as he gives the foundations, not everything, as you are on the path of evolution as they are, is to get in touch with them. For together you must work. This is cooperation. And it may not take place on the astral plane. It may take place on the Buddhic plane, where we have greater cooperation between man and deva. It is not safe for the human beings, poor, foolish things, goodness, what a perspective, to tamper with the forces of involution until they themselves are linked with the devas through purity of character and nobility of soul. I suppose these have to do with linking some of the higher devas. I'll have to have Tuya elaborate on this because she's closer to the devas than I am. I mean, at least in terms of knowledge and cooperation. And she, I know, will be able to bring in some important insights. And in the Moray Federation, we do have the classes, 260 and then 360, 460, 560, which take in the 15 rules for white magic. The generalities are discussed in the course 260. Poor foolish things. Do we feel insulted, or do we feel accurately labeled? Well, elementals are forces of involution. Devas in general, I think, are forces of evolution. The elementals have had to turn into devas. Man, the elemental, at the fourth initiation, has to turn into man, the deva. So, let me make this at least legible. So many hints given, which must be assimilated. Poor foolish things. I'm going to make that really big because it's just such a reminder of the blunders of which we are capable. Because we rush in where angels fear to tread. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Boy, that really summarizes our approach to some of the higher powers or the more intense powers. And angels have this great respect for the law and the word. As I've come to understand, from Tuya's own experience on these matters. Okay. Men, poor foolish things. Through rites and ceremonies, you can sense the devas and reach them, but not in the same manner, nor for the same reason as you can the elementals. Where would you get information like this that is so trustworthy and so specific? We have to realize the quality of what's being presented and realize that it far exceeded that which preceded or followed. There's so many things that are derivative of this material. You know, Master DK said, look, it's a good book, Masters on the Path, Masters and the Path by Leadbeater, but it post-stated what I said earlier in my books. And like so many theosophists, they were closet AAB readers. That is somehow great justification. And later theosophists have realized the mistake that was earlier made. And let us hope that the present Bailey people have the discernment to recognize the third installment when it is presented. Will there be a way that Master DK can offer that installment without the inevitable hassle of those who are pretending to do the same in illegitimate ways? Wishful thinking, you might say. The devas attend ceremonies freely and are not summoned. They come as you do to tap the power. When your vibrations are pure enough, the ceremonies serve as a common meeting ground. Well, let it be remembered they have equal rights with us, and many, just like our own masters, have a higher status. And like those who are still on the path of personality development, there are some that have lower status than those that are equal to man. They come to tap the power, and when our vibrations are pure enough, the ceremonies serve as a common meeting ground. As I say, no wonder the Christ is the teacher alike of devas and of men. And, I'll kind of put that in my very wanting seventh ray color. And more was said, tantalizing to think what it might be. I want to say in closing that when you have learned to use the activity aspect in work with the involutionary powers and the wisdom aspect in cooperating with the devas, you will then unitedly pass on to use the first aspect, that of will and power. Well, this is obviously something ahead of us that we have not managed. I guess it certainly induced a lot of humility when the students of Master DK in his groups realized the kind of letters they were being written. Written by an expert psychologist and dealing with issues that are hardly as elevated as the ones he seems to be discussing here. Before proceeding further, I seek to sound a note of warning as to the danger that lies in the calling and the contacting of these groups of builders, and more especially in the contacting of the elemental forces. Why the latter? So many caveats and so many earnest injunctions warning us about how not to step off the path of right behavior. So many strictures to be observed, so much caution to guide our way and prevent disaster. Why the elemental forces? Because these forces at all times find a response in one of the three lower bodies of men, these bodies regarded as separated sheaths being composed of these involutionary lives. Therefore, he who unwittingly lays himself open to direct contact with any elemental runs a risk and may bitterly rue the day. Warning. And, the inner monitor will come to prompt us when we are so tempted. But as a man approaches adeptship and has achieved mastery over himself, that's what a master of wisdom is, it's mastery over all of the lower vehicles and personality, and can consequently be trusted with the mastery of other forms of life, certain powers will be his. These powers, based as they are on law, will put into his hands the rule over which, over lesser lives, and will teach him, that cooperation with the Deva hosts, which will be so essential, towards the latter end of evolution, as a human being. The masters can certainly cooperate with the Deva hosts, and when we're told of the green Deva or the violet Deva that cooperate in instructing physicians and, you know, achieving healing, you just imagine that Master DK is en rapport with such beings. But the key is achieving mastery over oneself. And that begins in a humble way. Sometimes just not doing what you feel prompted to do. Sometimes doing what you feel, that towards which you feel inhibited, and being courageous in that respect because you know it is right. I remember seeing a film about Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis, marvelous actor. Anyway, it was about passing the Emancipation Proclamation. And I guess there was a congressman, senator from, it was a Kentucky, I think. And he was very reticent about voting a yes for the Emancipation Proclamation. And he struggled with himself bitterly. And, you know, Lincoln first talked to him and said, well, just do your best. Something like that. And then when the vote came, he struggled and he said, yes. 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 You know, and he was so relieved that he had chosen the way of courage, which towards which his conscience was prompting him. It was a great moment in the film. You know, he was just about dancing on his desk because he had liberated himself from the fear of speaking out, liberated himself from the inhibition caused by fear. And thus it is for many of us when we take the plunge to be truthful with ourselves regardless of the consequences. There the first rate comes in because, as DK says, speaking the truth through utter fearlessness, something like that. Now, let us see. One is tempted to go on if one possibly can. It's getting pretty late here. But I'll see, you know, there's no sense beginning a huge section, maybe. We're talking about mantras now, and we're talking about ways of making our approach. We've been talking about elementals and devas. When I think of what's going to be revealed, what can be revealed to us, even though we are poor foolish things. It's got a sense of humor there, if only it weren't so accurate. So mantrams of power, again, the comprehension of force, and it's long. Oh, nice definition of evil. We'll get there. Evil is but the sediment of unfinished karma. You know, goes to the bottom of the aura, as it were. And very Plutonic in that respect. And has its root in ignorance, even for the brothers of darkness. Well, we're still dealing with mantric forms, those connected with fire. Let's see how far it goes. Because obviously this would be like the old Welsh hymn, All Through the Night. And I'm afraid I would cease making sense at a certain point. So, more about mantrams, very long section here. Ah, amazing, the information about mantrams. It just inspires such respect. And here is the final, the last division of the sixth letter, very lengthy one. Obviously, to be plowed through in future days. And, you know, it doesn't ever hurt to look ahead, maybe. The use of sound collectively in meditation forms. I'm reminded of how the Estonian people basically sung the Soviets out of Estonia, you know, their occupation. What did they gather? 10,000 singers or people who sang? In a huge amphitheater, and the power of the sound was so great. After that, they left. We can never underestimate the power of sound. The united sounding of the sacred word, you know, just to whet our appetite a little bit for what is coming. Ah, purification of a city. Much about the Maharishi, you know, the teacher that the Beatles maybe made famous. It's very practical. And the use of rhythm collectively in meditation. He really gets into things that we may never have thought about on our own. Well, slow and steady makes the race. And if I was wondering whether I would go on tonight, this review of the kinds of things we're going to be dealing with discourages me from being overly and thus foolishly ambitious. Special occasions on which these forms will be employed. He's really laying the foundation. I mean, this should be one of the most important books. And there is the end of the letter. And the next one is 50 pages long. The use of color and sound. Extremely occult, but At the same time, in terms of a healing method, one of the first to be utilized. And I suppose we would begin to look at countries that have the fourth ray soul in order to find out where the development might occur. Germany, Austria, Brazil, Japan. Those are the ones I can remember right now that have the fourth ray soul. And some, you know, is hinted at, but it's pretty definite. The one on Japan is hinted at, but it's doubtless the fourth ray. Okay. So that takes us to page 203. And yet, way back here is where we have stopped. And we'll... Oh, I'd love to keep going. We'll stop some 26 pages before that. So, okay, I've spared you some of that looking around, and we've ended program 37 from the 12th, 13th of October, and maybe I have to say we've ended program 38. I think that's more correct. And we've gone from page 166, I think, to page 177. So 166. And let's see if that's correct. Kind of looks like it. Mantric forms. Okay. So 166. And then again, mantric forms and 166. And finally, we'll look at 177, mantrams of power. That's where we're going to pick up next time. It'll be, I believe, I hope I haven't gotten my numbers discombobulated, but I think program 39, we're ending with 166, and now we begin with 177. We don't know when we begin, maybe tomorrow. But this is from the 13th, 14th of October, and we'll call it the XX day, and we'll see how that works. Okay, friends, a rather long program. If I had my way, I'd go on till 5 hours. But I'm afraid I may be getting a little dull now. And though my tendency is to keep talking, it's already late enough to be wiser about that. Just enjoying so much this book, finding how fundamental it is and how much detail about things we just don't normally think about is offered in this book. Now, it's not the same as Cosmic Fire, but although it's a beginning book, it certainly isn't a beginning book in many ways. Maybe for the general public, Initiation Human and Solar was more an introductory book. This has many occult specifics, and it seems to be used for (laughs) theosophists, or people who have studied with Blavatsky, her material, and it's an amplification on that. I guess we have no idea about the depth and scope of the ageless wisdom, but a book like this, I find, for me, opens doors regarding that depth and scope. And I have, and I, maybe you do too, such a respect for the quality of that which is offered. And, you know, we know that we are in good hands, that our teacher of these things is a great teacher, extremely competent, and, you know, can look into any one of us if he wishes to expend the effort to do so. And, you know, he knows who's going to be reading these things. He's met so many of us before and worked with us before, and he knows our limitations and he knows our potentials. Of course, he too can study us more deeply, and they have their methods of such study. You know, you don't have to read the book word for word, some kind of, you know, what people produce, what they write, what they say, some kind of symbol appears to them which describes the condition in which the student finds himself or herself. I sometimes wonder whether DK, knowing certain people in his intended audience, doesn't target certain people with certain statements. So, the offering is considerable. The time to assimilate is inadequate when thinking about trying to assimilate the whole thing. But on the other hand, we don't need the whole thing. We need that which will particularly enhance our service, depending on what it is. And as I've said, to a great extent, it is educational at this time. There's just so much that people have to be exposed to in the right way so that they can have a deeper comprehension of what is truth. Now, you know, no words can contain truth, but words can certainly indicate where the truth is to be found. And we can change from words into experiences or imperiences. We can have the real substance of that which the words are intended to indicate. And because of the generosity of these masters who have written for us and who have given us so much that we could not on our own access, our progress is rapidly stimulated and our usefulness is stimulated. So that instead of just wanting to help, we actually can be equipped through understanding to help. And we have to be really grateful for the enhancement of our capacity, which such a teaching as this gives us. Well, we're about halfway through the book. I think it goes up to page 350 and we're at 177, so that's what is it, 154? Yeah. So just about exactly halfway through the book. And we've had approximately 38 programs of varying lengths. Now it's a question of whether this mode of study suits you or whether you just prefer to sit down with the book and in the quiet, or, you know, read your computer that has the books on them, and how you prefer. But this particular method does allow you to kind of take the books with you when you travel around or drive somewhere or go out for a walk or a run. You know, it can help. Any method of assimilation before the great conclave can help. You know, sometimes we wait till the last minute, and I'm sure that in terms of a life, many of us have waited until the last minute, these 5 years, for the full application of our intensity. But if we even grasp the urgency of the situation and how we must have this solid foundation of fact and understanding underlying the new dispensation, then that's already a big achievement. And so, you know, my purpose here, trying to last in the body at least until, you know, 2025, is to put an emphasis on this assimilation of the teaching to the degree that we can, which is bound to expand our ring pass knot of knowledge and our capacity to love and our willingness to do what the divine plan seems to indicate to us. We may be right, we may be wrong, but if we stick with light, love, and power, we're not going to be wrong. That's what the world needs, the same as goodness, beauty, and truth, you know, reversed. Truth, beauty, goodness, light, love, and power. So even though we're working behind the scenes, and maybe especially because we are, our intensity has to increase without becoming fanatical about it, you know, and missing other values. Our intensity has to increase. We have less than five years now until the great conclave. I assume it's going to be in Waysak of 2025. And one doesn't know really how long such things last. Also, the Leo Sirius festival is of great importance to the assembled hierarchy. But when that time comes, every one of us wants to be able to say, we have realized the urgency of the need, and we have done our best. Always things can be improved, and always we will realize that we didn't do quite as well as we might have, but we have at least tried to do our best and fulfilled our part. Atuya tells a story of the little bird, you know, forest fire. All the animals are running and hiding, and this little bird is swooping down into the lake and taking one drop of water from the lake, dropping it, coming back, dropping it, coming back, dropping it. And of course, the little bird is mocked, and how foolish, you can't do anything, what are you doing? And the little bird says, at least I'm doing my part. And, you know, we're bringing our little pail to the ocean of eternal wisdom. And we fill it to the degree we can, and we irrigate the desert to the degree we can. Another analogy, maybe. At least we do our part. Okay, I'll feel a lot better about dealing with mantrams of power on another occasion. And it'll take us all the way to 203. 26 pages, but it's like a lifetime to get through 26 pages. Alrighty. So I will stop the program, and my appreciation to you for being here or for listening this far, and hoping that it's doing some good and stimulating the abstract mind. Not only the concrete mind, but the abstract mind, and also maybe with some flashes of connectivity that we call intuition. That's my hope for all of us. So love and many blessings from Tuya and myself and all the members of the communication group. You know, doing as Master DK does, trying to teach and spread the knowledge of the ageless wisdom wherever we can find a response. On a lower level, of course, but, you know, emulating the Master. So we'll see you soon, my hope is. Bye-bye for now.